And I'm here in the studio with
Steve Bull.
And today we're going to be bringing you reflections on Pride here in Maine up until 10:30, at which point we'll turn it over to Pilar and Anella, and they're going to be doing some fun queer trivia. So till then, we're with you with songs and discussions about Pride in Maine.
And there's so much to talk about. We made it a 2.5 hour show. So we're also welcoming Lois Galgay-Reckitt. Good morning, Lois.
Good morning.
Thanks for getting in here on a fairly dreary day so far. But
yeah, it was the 60-hour week that preceded it that made it hard. Sorry. The legislature is like stringing me out to dry right now.
So. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, let's get right into it on Pride. We'll have, a few people calling in, and we have Lois here as an in-studio guest. And let's go back to the beginning, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, we had some trivia questions here that Anella had put together, and like, when was the first Pride? And, of course, that was the year after Stonewall in 1970.
Yep.
I think it was called Christopher Street Liberation Day.
That's correct. That's bonus points for that one.
Thank you, because I did lousy on this quiz earlier, so I need all the bonus points I can get. So, Lois, it's funny. I've been thinking about this show all week, and one of the things is just kind of the evolution of Pride that there's been a number of discussions about, like, how it was political protest at the beginning. And I always thought that there was always an ebb and flow. If there was something, the other thing about Pride, it's time of the year to, like, take stock of where we are and where we're going. And I know that maybe it became a party at times and a celebration, which is just fine. But also, like, when AIDS happened and there were other issues, you know, coming against our community, that people, you know, it would be reflected at Pride. So what's your sense on that?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. There was a small period of time when I was in Washington, D.C. with the Human Rights Campaign Fund. But and, of course, when Pride first started, I thought I was straight. So it took a little transition time here. But basically, I was reflecting a couple of days ago, we had a Pride celebration at the legislature. Mm-hmm. And there was talk, mention, of course, of Charlie Howard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was one of the instances where Pride really took on a way more serious implications. And I was heavily involved in the AIDS issue, but mostly from afar, because I was in Washington when that whole thing evolved. And was involved in getting the government to do a damn thing about it. So I think that there's, you're right about HIV. I think the violence in the community and all those other things came forward at a particular year. I remembered Stonewall was in 69, but I was not, I thought I was straight, and unless I got married in 68. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't until, I think, 76 that I came out. So I always laugh because I was saying in the legislature, I don't know whether they wanted to hear it or not, but, you know, I was the straight spokesperson for the first gay rights campaign.
Right.
And I was speaking with Peter Prizer the other night, who was the gay spokesperson for the campaign.
Right.
And reflecting on the day that I pulled him into the back hall where we were meeting, I said, Peter, there's something I have to tell you. And I said, I came out. I can't. You know, what am I going to do? And so, as I said to the legislature, I hopefully for my last time, I lied for 5-6 months about
who
I was.
Kind of like jumped out of the closet and jumped back in.
Jumped back in, yeah, so that I could maintain that role in the campaign.
Right.
And so it was. But I was also talking about Jerry Talbot and that campaign, and of course with his daughter now being Speaker of the Maine House, it's very exciting. And but, you know, I remember the day when I asked him to sponsor the first gay rights bill. He said, well, of course, discrimination is discrimination, you know.
Right.
And thank heavens he's still alive. And,
amazing.
At this point, yeah, it really is.
Hey, Jerry. well, he he had a huge profile for us in the beginning here in Maine with Wild Stein. We're coming up on our 50th, and Jerry was our real ally. And it's funny, he was a first-term legislator from Portland, first African-American, and yet, and exactly what you said, I came out of knowing Jerry that he impressed upon me that democratic rights are indivisible. You can't say, well, I'm for these folks, but, you know, maybe not so much these folks over here. And we were very grateful for that. He was integral in us getting the first gay rights plank passed by the Democratic Party in Maine in 1974, only the second one in the country. Then the following year, they were redoing the criminal code, which some of the stuff dated from the 1840s. So it was time. And so we got, you know, sodomy and all these three things off the criminal code, decriminalized them, and maybe only a handful of states at that point had done that.
That's right.
And Jerry was very involved with that.
So if I, as the historian of the bunch, because right now I know, like, you've been talking about a lot of things, and I know for new Mainers or Mainers who were not there at the time, there's a lot of things got thrown around. So I think to start with, we should say, Steve, happy 50th anniversary for founding the Wild Stein Club at UMaine Orono, which was one of the major institutions. It was one of the first queer groups in Maine. It was a student group founded at UMaine Orono in 1973. And following the founding of their club, they then decided to put on a massive Gay Maine Symposium, which was a giant conference. The university and some of the classic enemies of LGBTQ people freaked out and tried to stop it from happening. As a result, every newspaper, straight, gay, everything started covering it. The Advocate at this point in time starts covering it. It goes national. So basically, by the time the conference happens in April of 1974, everybody knows it's happening, so everybody shows up. And during that whole controversy, everybody, of course, was writing into the newspapers, going on television, and the Maine's NAACP came out in favor of the Wild Stein Club holding the conference, being a club on the campus, which is how Jerry Talbot got involved and found out about it, was because of all this hoorah that happened. Which, and then Sturgis Haskins, who was also involved in the Wild Stein Club, he was on the Democratic Party, involved in their organizing, so he also helped push that stuff. So it's that kind of starts everything off. And we can also talk about Charlie Howard, and also I'd also like to talk about, like, the history of Pride in Maine, period, dot. So, because Charlie is related to that, so,
The other thing, the other piece of the Wild Stein piece, and I was not at that conference, but I remember, I mean, the legislature tried to defund the University of Maine on account of it. So that was a big part of the hoopla, is to try to stop that from happening.
It's hard for people to understand that we were one of the vanguard groups in the early days, a battleground. And, like, back during those early wars of gay liberation, you know, troops were sent to the front. So we were, you know, very lucky to get all these, the initial leadership of the National Gay Task Force. We actually formed before the National Gay Task Force, which is, and we got all the who's who of the East Coast here. I also want to make a point that I was a co-founder, not the founder, and it was a collective of people, pretty amazing people. But we started the conversation, and it was very polarizing. But people had to pick sides. And that was very useful. It was the beginning of developing some allies, you know, like Jerry.
And figuring out who your enemy was.
They were very outspoken.
It wasn't hard to spot.
It was like the usual, the fundamentalist preachers, and they had radio shows. So they had a lot of effect, and also very conservative legislators as well. Both Democrat and Republican. I mean, the Democrat from Lewiston, Louis Jalbert, Jalbert. He was like, he had a thing for us. He couldn't let us go.
Well, and the Westbrook reps were also quite bad in the early days. Tuffy Laffin and Bob Carrier, I think. Was
yeah, well, name. You know yeah. all these folks, because a few years later you were trying to get a gay rights bill.
Passed. Yeah, right.
Yeah, 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 so yeah. you met all of them.
Yeah.
And it's funny, this week I was at an event at the ECC, the Equality Community Center in Portland, our first you know, major community center. And it was such a wonderful vibe of folks when I walked in. It was a history day thing. And all these young people from Casco Bay High School, really interested in the early days of the movement. And then, lo and behold, Roland Labby was there, mm-hmm. who opened Roland's pre-Stonewall here in Portland. Mm-hmm. And was, but it made me think about, because you do this bar tour, yep. Megan, and that the number of queer spaces has changed so much.
Yeah.
And I still miss that. But I had that vibe in that sense when I walked into that community center and saw all these people I know from different generations all in the same space to talk about stuff. And I think that's a really important thing. I mean, there's one gay bar left in Portland, but can you mention a bit about your bar tour? And
yeah, and I will also say, if you're just joining us, welcome. Welcome to Rainy Pride Portland. So we are Rainbow Reflections, celebrating Pride in Maine. I'm Megan McGregor. I'm here with Steve Bull. We are talking about Pride in Maine. And yes, I am doing a bar tour.
Is it virtual?
Yes, it is virtual. It's on Zoom. So if you are in Calais, Maine, if you are in Auburn, Maine, if you are in Portland, Maine, doesn't matter, you can attend it. As long as you can get to that Wi-Fi connection somewhere.
Have you ever done it in person, Megan?
I have. Mm-hmm. Yep. I do it. We started it in person.
On a very hot day.
On a very hot day. Oh, my gosh. It was very, very, very warm. Which is why we did it originally in June. We are now shifted after that very, very hot day to doing it in October, which is LGBTQ History Month, which makes more
perfect,
sense. And
yeah.
it's not terribly hot out.
Although in years to come, it'll probably get hotter.
I know. We're going to have to shift it to December. Yeah. But I did do it on Zoom last year during June, and we are doing it again this year. It is on Zoom. It is on June 22nd, which is next Thursday, if I'm remembering off the top of my head.
Is there a link to register?
There is a link. We can pop it onto the socials.
Yeah.
On WMPG's social page.
Yeah.
Also, if you would like to brave the rain, which I would encourage you to do, we are going to be at Pride. Pride is still happening here in Portland.
That's
just bring
right.
your brellies and your wellies.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to be tabling at Pride the LGBTQ collection, which is a special collection that the Special Collections of the University of Maine has. It's basically the authority on history, queer history here in Maine. That's what the collection collects. Which is how I know about all these bars that used to exist when I was not here.
Lois, let's shift a little bit here. The other thing about Pride is also that it's such a case of visibility and the power of that. Mm-hmm. And for young people or people newly out, that it's an empowering experience. You were also involved with the Coming Out Day. Is that right, with the creation of that?
Yes. Sorry, I'm like,
yeah, hello.
Yeah, I was in Maryland actually at a conference of the national leaders of the LGBT movement, which of course wasn't called that at the time, and Michael Callum was there. I was just listening to his music the other day, and it was interesting. We're trying to figure out how to make the movement move forward, and that's where the concept of National Coming Out Day came, was that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, it was the National Gay Task Force was there, Human Rights Campaign Fund mm-hmm. was there, which is why I was there, and a whole bunch of other groups. And the Olympics were on, I remember that. I remember because we were all at the bar watching Debbie Thomas fall on the ice.
Oh, okay.
And what year was this?
What year was
Olympics.
That? It was an Olympic year. 80,
winter Olympics.
Let's see. Winter Olympics, and I was in D.C., so I was there from 84 to 90, so it had to be like 80, seven, eight, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
Must have been 88. I think Olympics are every 4 years.
Yeah, but so I don't know. The winter was slightly off. Different.
Our historian is on it right now.
Yeah, really, that's terrible. I can't remember that.
I just want to mention that WMPG is grateful for support from listeners and from One Longfellow Square. One Longfellow Square offers a warm and intimate atmosphere for unforgettable live music, performing arts, and community events. Tickets and details at onelongfellowsquare.com.
Yeah, what's been wonderful about National Coming Out Day is to remember that, you know, it started with this little germ of an idea, and then it, you know, just grew and grew and grew and grew until it became sort of a normalcy thing in terms of the it happening. And I wish it were more visible now. It's sort of interesting because as I mentioned briefly, I'm in the legislature now. It's my seventh year there, and last year there were seven of us LGBT people who were out in the legislature. This year I think it's 11. I mean, it's like they're right. We've been recruiting, so it's been very interesting. And tell you the truth, I couldn't name the people for you. I mean, I just whoever happens to be there, and I happen to know. But it's both more important and less important now, which is a sort of an odd conundrum of our visibility.
And 1988 was the first National Coming Out Day celebration.
Okay,
so that first,
so the germs of that were at a bar watching the Olympics.
Okay,
that's good. I like the background story.
Yeah.
With Mainers among them, as it was, they were with all the LGBT stuff.
Yeah. Lois, can you reintroduce yourself to the audience? I maybe should have done this at the beginning. You keep bringing up the legislature and things like that. Who is this person here? Lois Galgay-Reckitt.
Yeah, I was the little straight woman on the first gay rights campaign. But anyway, I came to Maine because when I grew up, my mother used to take in sewing, and so we could pay for our $40 a week cottage in Goose Rocks Beach. So I stayed every summer of my life in Goose Rocks for $400 a summer, which is, people don't even believe that was possible even that many years ago. But basically, I told my mother when I was seven I wanted to move to Maine, and she suggested I wait till I grow up. And so when I did, I moved to Maine with my first husband. Everybody always laughs that I had more than one, but I just described myself as a slow learner. And so I moved up here, and I began working. I was sort of an activist looking for a cause, and I was actually the state person for zero population growth when I first moved up here, because I was looking, and it resonated with me. That lasted about a year, I mean, my interaction with it. And I was I went to a speech at the University of, at that time, University of Maine, Portland-Gorham, and heard a woman speak who inspired me so much that the next day, 10 of us started the National Organization for Women chapters in Maine.
Right.
And so it was through the women's movement that I came to the gay rights movement.
Right.
And what was wonderful for me personally is because I had spent a fair amount of time in that, in the women's movement, and knew many lesbians in that movement. For me, when I came out, I didn't have to go through the phase of, you know, what's the matter with me? What should I, you know, all this self-questioning stuff, because I knew wonderful women who were lesbians in the women's movement. And so when I myself discovered myself, there was no self-blame involved at all, no self-anything. I mean, there was self-joy and identity and all that stuff, but there wasn't negativity for me. And because we're talking a long time ago, we're talking 76, it was a real gift to me that I came out through the women's movement.
Lois, and I want to get back to what's happening in the legislature now at some point, but let's do a little music break. And also, I want to remind people you can call in. We're at 780-4909. And let's see what we got for music coming up. Hey!
Welcome back to Rainbow Reflections, celebrating Pride in Maine. I'm Megan McGregor. I'm here with Steve Bull. We are celebrating a damp Pride today. Portland Pride, as far as we know, because we're tabling at it later, is going forward. So bring your brellies, bring your wellies. We're still going to be there. Come down, celebrate everybody damping, marching damply in the parade, and then come visit everybody down in Deering Oaks. I think the Deering Oaks stuff kicks off at 1 o'clock. I think the parade starts at one
at Monument Square.
Yeah, so we'll all still be there, so come on out.
Rain or shine.
Rain or shine. Mm-hmm. So we were talking earlier this is about Pride in Maine, Lewis, you mentioned earlier Charlie Howard, so as the historian in the group who has been, so I'm associated with, I work at University of Southern Maine, I'm in the libraries there, and in the libraries, we have the Jean Byers Sampson Collection for Diversity in Maine, and one of those collections in that big collection is the LGBTQ collection, which houses Maine's queer history. And I dig around in that collection a lot because I'm a historian by trade, and I can't help myself.
Yeah,
I get itchy hands.
I'll testify to that.
Yeah. I've been pulling Steve along with me since he is part of Maine's queer history. So... what's really interesting about Maine stuff is that I started looking at like those questions of like, all right, so we have Portland Pride. How old exactly is that? When does that show up? Because Pride kind of nationally, as we know it, that shows up in 1970 as a anniversary celebration protest of the Stonewall Pride riots, or Stonewall riots in 1979. So when I started looking into it, I actually found it's interesting in that I found a couple of things that happened that are like pre-Pride things that everybody at the time is like, this is our Pride, before we actually get kind of like a Portland Pride, at least, which I think, as far as I know, historically, is like the first quote-unquote Pride in Maine as we know it. So digging back, ironically, the very first kind of Pride thing we have in Maine is in Lewiston. They have in May of 1984, mm-hmm. they have a LGBTQ masquerade ball at the municipal building. Oh. And we have photographs of it in the collection. And one of the reasons I love this is that in the photographs, somebody has dressed up as Miss Piggy. And it's like, which is like, why is she a gay icon? And it's like, in some ways, it's like, look, by 1984, she is a gay icon. So, right. So that's kind of one of the first things of like everybody in the community is coming together. Everybody's like, oh yes, yeah, everybody, this is all one big space we're all in, and this is very similar to like Pride kind of a thing. Because before that, everybody in Maine would just go down to Boston Pride.
Right.
I think partially because we were used to going down to Boston to go to the bars and stuff in the earlier days, pre-1980s, because that's where the bars and the bathhouses were. And then Charlie Howard, which you had mentioned before. Mm-hmm. Charlie Howard was a 23-year-old man who was murdered by three teenagers in Bangor. He was tipped over the causeway, and he drowned in the canals there. And that sparked off a riot in Maine. There are three major protests that happen as a result of that. There's one in Bangor, of course, where this happened. There's one in Lewiston, Auburn, and there's also one here in Portland. And there are in Portland, the Portland one, there were about, I think the numbers were somewhere around like 600 people show up to this. And they go to First Parish Church, where they give a bunch of speeches. Dale McCormick, who is a name you should know in Maine's queer history, she gave a speech. John Preston, another name you should know, he gave a speech about it. And then they had a march from First Parish Church to Monument Square. And in the articles that talk about this, everybody is saying, this is Pride. This is what this is and what this feels like. And then we don't get real kind of what we now see as what we are now celebrating as of today, that kind of Pride of like there's a parade and there are things. That happens here in Portland 1987.
87.
Yeah. So 1987 is when Portland has its first Pride, which I found very interesting in that it's, in some ways it's so late. Mm-hmm. But I think it makes sense in that I think Charlie Howard kicks a lot of stuff off. I kind of as a historian, I kind of am classifying that as the death of Charlie Howard is the second major wave of queer activism in Maine. Steve's...
Well, that's when MLG...
Right.
GPA.
Yeah, Maine Gay Lesbian Task...
Prior to the beginning of Equality Maine, basically.
Right. You know. Maine Gay Political... Maine Lesbian Gay Political Alliance was MLGPA. Yeah, which Dale McCormick was one of the people who started that up. But yeah, that was... And they are the ones who... MLGPA is turned into what is now Equality Maine. So,
yeah. And the first gay rights campaign was sort of the predecessor of MLGPA.
Right.
And there's another woman who was involved named Kate McQueen, who happened to be my partner at the time, and she's now in Delaware. But it was a really, and they're still trying to get her papers up into the university. They haven't come yet. I don't think she's just hasn't got around to it, but. My papers are all there too, like a gazillion of them, and they're not all there because I haven't keeled over dead yet, but which is not in my immediate plans, I hope. But basically, I think there were conferences that were similar to what happened at Wildstein in various places over time.
Yes.
And I remember in particular one of the years that it was here at USM because we had a dance in the basement of the, whatever that building is over there. I remember because I was dancing with my attorney at the time, and these ruffians, there were glass windows up high in this room, and these kids came by, and I think they were kids, and busted in the windows, and I don't know who else, but I had glass in my eye, and it was just terrifying. And I've always thought to myself, you know, I've never been personally assaulted. And then I went, holy crap, I have been, you know. But and fortunately, I didn't have any after effects because glass comes out, not in like metal or wood would, but it was scary. And but that, I think those kinds of dances used to be the rallying cry, you know, because there was no place where you could do that. And so, and my background in the women's movement was whenever we had a conference, I mean, the highlight was the dances. And we would do that. And when people tried to stop us from doing it, there was the holy hell broke out. But basically, so the dances became part of the, I guess they were called symposiums, but they weren't.
No, it was all part of the symposium series. The first one was in 74, and it went through like 1999.
Yeah. Yep, 1999 was last, then there were 25 in total.
Yeah.
They kept shifting, as you said, around in Maine. So, like, it was at some of the major places where there was, they went to Prescott Isle a lot. They went to, I think there was one at UMaine Farmington. There was one, there were a couple down here at University
College
of Southern Maine.
College of the Atlantic.
College of the Atlantic,
They got all around the place. Well, we can dance, you know.
Yeah.
So, so I do want to mention that the Wildstein, when it really blew up, was when we announced having a dance on campus in December of 73. And Benjamin Bubar of the Maine Christian Civic League went nuts, took out a full-page ad in newspapers around the state, decrying that since we cannot reproduce, they need to recruit. So that's why they have dances. So a side story to that, we had it successfully, but it actually got picked up by the Associated Press and became a national story. So it's one thing if it's Berkeley or Columbia in New York, but Orono, Maine? So we were kind of an oddity.
And but, I think in that place, that was also, at that dance, I think there were some students from Colby who came down, right? And you guys helped them.
Four people came from Colby, and then they went back and formed their own group.
Right.
That's how it happens,
And the bridge.
You mentioned at the symposia, I believe the Maine Lesbian Feminists were formed out of a workshop there. And my understanding is MLGPA, after Charlie Howard, that was a discussion held at a workshop, too. So, yeah, I mean, and on coming out day. So the event in Orono for the 50th Wildstein is going to be on the week of coming out week in October. It's like October 13th up there.
Friday, October 13th.
And then we're going to do one here at USM
on the 19th.
The following week. And that's going to concentrate more on the symposia series and the first organizations that were formed, because the Maine Gay Task Force was formed out of the first symposium. We got the newsletter started coming out that year. I mean, kind of the foundations of structure of organization for a statewide organization began then.
Well, you mentioned before.
You might be called on again, by the way.